You know, what happened is not okay, and it can't happen again. It shouldn't happen again. It doesn't need to happen again. Like, I don't need his pardon. I don't need his approval, nor do I want it.
Hey, everybody. Rich coming to you here at leavingmaga.org for the Midas Touch Network. We got a brand new testimonial for you today of someone who left MAGA. Now, this is someone may have already seen, actually, in the news. His name is Jason Riddle from the great state of New Hampshire. For those of you who might be recognizing him, Jason is someone who rejected a January 6 pardon. Jason, I want to thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I really appreciate it. I know that there are many out there in the Midas Mighty community who have read a little bit about your story. So we're going to get into why you rejected the pardon, but I want to start with something that's not been reported in the press coverage, which is talk a little bit about your upbringing and how you feel like how you were raised and some of your experiences and influences, how it led you to join the MAGA community.
Well, my parents got divorced when I was pretty young, and I think maybe that, along with my father's parenting techniques, he had two forms of parenting. Is either he was mad or he was absent. And everyone on his side of the family, that side of the family, not everyone's an alcoholic on that side of family, but there was a lot of heavy drinking, and there still is. And by the time I left high school, I was a pretty heavy drinker. And it only got worse as time went on, and I definitely involved politics with it too. I was very prone to just going on binges and going on social media instigating people, and was very what's the word? Sorry, having a hard time with this. Controversial, so to speak.
What kind of? Thank you for sharing that. So, what kind of media did you consume? What were some of the figures or media that you felt like maybe brought you to gravitate to the MAGA community? Because I feel like a lot of those influences, it definitely leads people. It can help steer them toward MAGA.
I was mostly on Facebook. After getting out of the military, I was in college majoring in political science, and while in class, it was me and another veteran who this veteran I'd end up heading down to the Capitol for January 6th with 4 years later. But I met him in college, and most people in the classrooms were Bernie Sanders supporter, and this one veteran and I, we were Trump supporters, and we would argue with everyone in class. The 28 people in the class would all say one thing, and then Paul and I would say the other, and we'd be the only two holdouts. And I took those politics and this debate style to social media, and I didn't go to on social media. I thought I was being politically active, majoring in political science, being in school for it gave an air of authenticity to what I was doing, but I never learned anything. I only went there to argue. I didn't go there to find out what is right, but I like to prove people wrong, and that's all I seem to care about. And I had 10 years on most of the students that were in my classes with, so it was sometimes easy to pick apart the arguments that these students would bring up in support of Bernie Sanders, and compared to actually just coming up with why it would be right to support Trump. I never did that. It was proving you wrong, and somehow that gave me the feeling that I was right.
I think that I can relate to what you're saying, because the the feelings of wanting to be proven that we're on the right side. It definitely informed my thinking before I decided to become a MAGA community member and become a volunteer. What was it, though, about the community itself that really appealed to you? Now, you're a veteran. So
yes, I was in the Navy, and I joined the Army Reserves after. And I spent a lot of time after college. I worked as a correctional officer, and then I worked at the post office, and I kept trying to make government work. But it wasn't working because of all these problems. I was because of my drinking. And I didn't want to admit that, though. And the more useless I became as a person, you know, I got fired from corrections. If I didn't get fired from the post office, I would have been. I quit. The more useless I became, the more louder I became of a MAGA supporter. It filled my time with just noise instead of action. And then going to these rallies in my mind was action. It was patriotism. It was love of one's country. And, you know, it didn't really faze me that I'm driving around going to right-wing nationalist rallies. To me, I was going around and spreading the word, and you know, it turned into more or less of a routine. And by the time January 6th, it was a routine I was very used to.
What I hear in what you're saying is what I call MAGA to everyone, which is a community. You found a like-minded group. You were going to rallies. You had a shared enemy. And there's something that I think the public will want to hear from you, because there's this question that comes up a lot in the public discourse about January 6th, and we'll get to that in a moment, that part of your story. But what is it about some of the veterans who appeared and rioted at January 6th? Do you think that there is something in the training or upbringing of a veteran that makes them more susceptible to some of the MAGA lies? I'm curious about your take as a vet and how that applies as you see it to other veterans.
Well, at the Trump rallies and on January 6th, there was this, even before January 6th, just at the rallies themselves, there was this mob mentality, especially if, like, say, someone's getting kicked out of the rally, you know, a protester gets kicked out of the rally, like, in unison, everyone will look together and will band together and look at this person and embarrass that person, and or maybe even physically remove that person without even questioning the authority, you know. And that's something a lot of us were trained when we're, you know, whether former policemen or veterans, there was just like this instant bond you felt. I distinctly remember on January 6th with complete strangers, that something that is clearly being taken advantage of by the, you know, starter of this movement.
So let's talk about January 6th, because I want to spend some time on this.
Okay.
Take us through your thought process after the election, between November and January 6th. Take us into, in as real time as you can, your world and what it was like for you in those 2 months in between.
After Trump lost the election, I was working before and after. I was working at the post office, and my friend Paul, who I had been gone to all these rallies with and had all those classes with back in college, would talk while I was delivering mail. I had a Bluetooth in my ear, and he would be on the, he was unemployed because he too was having problems after he graduated. He'd gotten fired at least twice. And we were enablers. We would just, we would complain to each other after we got fired and blame the liberals for our getting fired. And one of the one of the people Trump pointed the finger at after losing the election was the post office. So I'm working at the post office and I have a Bluetooth in my ear and I'm talking to another lunatic who thinks just as crazy thoughts as I am. And I spent my entire day complaining about the election, complaining about the liberals going through the mail. And if I'd be at someone's house who had a Biden sign in their lawn, I'd be like, oh, this freaking liberal, that and this and that. And he'd be in the Bluetooth and we were just riling each other up. And, by the time I'd quit the post office, I think it was December 31st. I don't know. I think I left before that. But when I go back and look up the exact date, according to the post office, I left on New Year's Eve. But by the time Trump had asked people to come down to protest, between Paul and I, it wasn't even a question. We knew we were going down.
Now, you say, Jason, about had these crazy thoughts. But at the time, it's what you believed, right?
I knew he lost the election. I honestly didn't care. By the time of the post office, I was drinking every single day. I was drinking while working. I was drinking when I woke up in the morning. I was just kind of surviving from day to day, and I at this point, I knew I had a problem and I didn't know I was going to get past it. I didn't know how we're going to get past Trump losing the election. And one thing about MAGA is associating politics and parts of your life where it shouldn't be associating. And my drinking problem, my problem with work, politics shouldn't have been a factor that I shouldn't be worrying. I shouldn't have been worrying about who's the next president. I should be worrying about getting myself sober and then getting a job. But because Trump lost the election and needed his supporters to come down to D.C., that was something I had to do in my mind. And I somehow associated that with getting through to the next step of whether it's getting sober or getting another job. I'm like, oh, first I got to go down to this rally and see how that goes. It gives you I was a non-functioning alcoholic at this point now where I can't even hold a job. So, social events weren't normal anymore. So, I'm losing the words to describe it. The feelings I had at the time, they were just so empty and despairing that, I guess just showing up was a sense of duty at that point.
No, I think you're really highlighting just the pressures to conform and the peer pressures are real. And I think that for a lot in the public, I don't ask them to defend your actions or my actions or rhetoric in the past, but some of the challenges faced when someone is very deep in a community is that it is really difficult to walk away in part because of the community of it. And that's a very candid admission you're making, which was, you just said, I knew that he lost. I knew that he lost also. I didn't go to the Ellipse. I knew people who went. I would not have gone even if invited. What upset me about January 6th was not that law enforcement was attacked and there was a riot at the Capitol. What upset me about January 6th at the time was I was looking at everyone who insurrected and I thought, they're ruining our chances of a 2024 comeback. So my concern was damage control. My concern was political future. It wasn't, wow, people are getting hurt and possibly might die today. So that's an admission that you're making. I appreciate you being honest about that, that it was that you felt a sense of duty to the leader and the community to go. So now take us through after the Ellipse. You're there for the speech. You hear the president. Then what?
Well, at first we had confused where the speech was going to be. And I had Ubered to the White House. I paid for the Uber. My friend Paul was with me. We'd invited another friend along. His name is Matt. And he was also a fired firefighter with a drinking problem. So he had three veterans with drinking problems who've all been fired within the past few years. Heading down to D.C. wouldn't go wrong. But we stayed at a hotel outside of D.C. and Ubered to the White House. And there is a apartment complex in Washington, D.C. called the White House. And that's where the Uber had brought us. And we discovered this obviously wasn't where we wanted to go. So I had changed the Uber to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And then we were heading towards the right White House when the Uber driver pointed out, as we're passing the Washington Monument, "I think you guys want to go here." And so he pulled over and let us out. So it was thanks to the Uber driver, we even got to the right spot. And we heard Trump speaking on the other side of the hill of the Washington Monument. We didn't actually see him there. We saw the crowds of people walking towards the Capitol building, and we came to the conclusion that Trump is probably over at the Capitol building speaking there. So we walked over to the Capitol building, and my friends had stopped following me, when we had to step over a barrier. They were smart enough to know that's probably not a good idea to keep following the crowd. I kept going. When violence started erupting and when people started storming, into the building, my initial reaction was confusion, because, I'm thinking I'm going to watch Trump speak. And instead, now I'm with a group of people storming into the Capitol building. Is it because Trump's in there and they're holding him hostage? What's happening? That was my initial thought. And I was also confused by the chance to hang Mike Pence. I don't have strong feelings for or against Mike Pence. So when people were doing that, I was a little confused. But then when the Capitol building started getting broken into, it was just basically a mass immaturity movement on the part of the riot where I was at. I was not down. I see the videos of what was happening down in the tunnels with the extreme, violence and cops, one police officer being tasered. And I didn't see that. I saw property destruction and people throwing papers around, like more or less like as if our team had just won a game and we're rioting after the game. That was more of the feeling I was experiencing, or felt with the people around me when we first went into the building. And it was euphoric and jubilant. And even after a cop had come in and yelled at me to leave, in my mind too, I was also within the confines of the law by doing what a cop told me to do as soon as he told me to. I'm like, I'm good. The cop told me to leave, so I left. But even though I'd already, seen violence against police officers and entered the building, I obviously had already broken the law at that point. And after I had left the building, the gentleman who I'd hawked the book I'd picked up a book on my way out of the building, and I'd hawked it to someone right outside the building. I'd start talking to someone, and he'd offered me $40 for it. And he gave me $40. I gave him the book, and he said people were getting into the building, he heard. And I was like, oh, people are in there. They're there. And he's like, do you know people got shot, right? And I was like, no one got shot. It's a party in there. And he's like, no, someone got shot. I saw a woman who got shot in the neck get brought out of the building. And it was like from that moment, that's where all that jubilance and all the excitement and all those immature feelings I was having, it turned into fear really quick. And I remember I was looking at the police a lot differently at that point. They were starting to barricade us into the building. And I remember thinking, these police, they can shoot us right now legally. And I remember being really afraid. And I had to I had to walk along the building to find an opening. There was no walking away from the building where I was, because there were so many people still pouring in. And the police, there's police when I'm looking away from the building, there's police to my left starting to make a wall barricading us in. And there was rioters coming in from the right. And I'd walked along the building until it started to open up. And then I walked out and I started to run. And I ran for, it felt like eternity. I think it was a good hour or two I was running. My phone had died during the ride, so I couldn't get in contact with the people I'd come down with. I ended up running back and then turning around and kind of heading back to where I'd come from until I found a T-Mobile. And all the businesses were shutting down too. All the businesses were kicking everyone out and shutting their doors, but T-Mobile was still open and they let me plug my cell phone in and call my friends, and they came and got me.
Wow. Thank you for the detail on that. And is it fair to say that after you were arrested for your role on that day, that you were defiant at first?
Oh, absolutely. I loved negative attention so much, and you know, I really got it there, and I wanted to piss everyone off as much as I could. It almost became a mission for me. I put on Facebook at one point, my only regret is we gave the Capitol building back. And that actually showed up in the Boston Globe. And, a lot of my family had stopped talking to me. Everyone on my father's side of the family stopped talking to me. And so the negative attention also comes with the sprinkling of compliments from the other fringe groups and the fringe people and the people who support Trump. And so I would sort of gesture to those people and basically be a mascot. I was working, I was volunteering for free for Trump at that point.
So take us through when your doubts started to commence. Around what time, what year, the time period of the year, what triggered it, what you were thinking as you went through what I would consider an epiphany of eventually leaving MAGA. Take us, again, as real time as you can into your life at that moment when you're starting to have these doubts.
The government ended up forcing sobriety on me. Not long after the riot, around the time I got arrested, I did an interview with Catherine Underwood. I had told her I'm going to run for office, and she wanted to do an interview for that. And I did an interview while drinking and confused my congressmen and my senators. And I said, I'm going to run for Congress against a senator. And I went viral. It came to the attention of I got the public attention, but I also got the government's attention. And I had a probation officer. Her name is Corinne Hess. And she violated my probation that I was under for being out on bail for the riot. And so then they added a stipulation into my bail conditions of needing to breathe into a breathalyzer twice a day. And that's when I this is the first long-term sobriety I ever experienced since I had started drinking. And it was before I had to go to prison that, after my brain, things started to connect and I started thinking rationally. The things Trump was saying didn't seem so rational, and I didn't really agree with them. But I kept that to myself, and I reported to prison, where I became more or less a little Robin Hood folk hero in the prison for having stormed the Capitol building. Not even with the inmates, but some with the correctional officer staff were cheering me on for having stormed the Capitol building. So I became this mascot for douchebags that was helping me in prison. And so I kept that image, and I kept my opinion of my emerging disagreements with Trump. I kept that to myself. And afterwards, after I got a prison where I no longer needed it, it didn't take long for me to just be completely disgusted by the things Trump was saying and doing. And my epiphany was when he got indicted and he asked people to come out and protest for him. And I remember my first reaction in my head to that was, Trump, how can you do that? Where, you're going to, if people come out and protest, there might be another riot. There might be another Ashley Babbitt. Someone else might be killed. How can you do this, Trump? And I remember thinking to myself, it's because Trump doesn't know you, for starters. The fact you think you're even thinking about his feelings proves you have an unhealthy obsession. And I'm an idiot for even believing he possibly cares. And from that moment, that's when I just slowly but surely came to understand who I really was in all this. And now here we are, not long after, I'm now voting for Harris.
Yeah, I think that's an important point, because I want viewers to know that, that you were not a supporter of the president this past November. And, I recognize that there's the human aspect of this. I recognize that maybe some of your alcoholism made being in MAGA a little bit easier. And, you know, and there's, but then as you work to get sober, you start to see everything clearer.
Yes. And, you know, this patriot hero title that's being attached to Capitol Riders, it sounds good and it feels a hell of a lot better than convict or domestic terrorist. And part of me wanted to just keep saying that, you know, that way I'm, you know, and not, you know, not accept the reality that I did commit an act of domestic terrorism. But that would be lying, and lying is a big trigger. I was lying to myself about my drinking. It's what kept me drunk. So, I mean, if I'm okay with lying about my politics, then, you know, where does the line end? What else will I become okay with? You know, I've already actively participated in the dismantling of our democracy and what Trump is doing. And, you know, so for me, if I did nothing, that was I think a lot of riders at this point are just like, I'm done with politics. They probably didn't. I guarantee you the majority of the Capitol riders didn't even vote. A lot of them were traumatized by it and they're just staying away from politics. But having already actively participated in this fascist movement, to not do anything, then that means to condone. I mean, I've already participated in it. So I felt the need to do more. And that's why I voted for Harris. I donated to her campaign. I signed up to volunteer, but that was, I think, going to be a hard sell, knocking on people's door and saying, hi, I'm a Capitol rider, vote for Harris. So I am on a volunteer list somewhere here in Keene, but I did not actually ever take the time to go knock on doors.
I want to reiterate the point that you didn't support him in November, because I think for many, you know, they might think, you supported him and then but it's too late now. But that's not the case for you, that you didn't. You supported Vice President Harris. So why reject the pardon? You know, you've got a chance to get a clean, you know, I know that it doesn't expunge the record, but it restores all of your rights. So why turn it away? Why reject it? Why shun it?
It's coming from the man who started the riot. And it's the man who started the riot saying, this is okay. What you did is okay. It doesn't get rid of it. It just says, he says it's okay. And I disagree. I do not think it's okay. I don't agree with his narrative of January 6th. I find his narrative extremely insulting. I find his narrative of what happened insulting, not just to the Capitol police officers that died, but also to the rioters that have died. You know, Ashley Babbitt was a veteran, someone who loved her country. And, you know, and I think that's, you know, her family has done a little campaigning for Trump. And I think it's part of that, you know, refusal to accept reality. You know, I know Ashley Babbitt's mom is one of those people who's gone out there and is politicking this fake narrative, you know, and I don't blame her. I wouldn't want to say that my daughter did these things, but by pushing that lie, I think there's a very good chance, you know, if you do something, you know, people go to prison for a reason, you know, and if you don't learn your lesson, you keep, you know, acting out the same behavior, there's a good chance it's going to happen again. And it's going to be even worse next time. So, you know, I think Ashley Babbitt's family should take that into consideration. You know, what's worse, you know, that your daughter and wife and mother died for something stupid and wrong? Or would you rather try to pretend she died for something else and then get more people killed in the process? And that's what's going to end up happening. You know, this is.
Jason, I just want to say in closing, I really appreciate you sharing this. I think you have a redemption story in more ways than one. Congratulations also on your sobriety.
Oh, thank you.
I've known friends. I've known people who really struggled with alcohol and it's hard. It was hard for them to stay clean. And so I want to credit you for that and offer you some praise, even though I know you're not seeking it. And I want to welcome you to our Leaving MAGA community. And I want to welcome you to the Midas Touch Network, Midas Mighty community. I always like to close our shows with a positive affirmation. I'm Rich, and I left MAGA.
I'm Jason, and I'm leaving MAGA.
Hey guys, if you like this video, make sure you leave a comment down below and subscribe. Also, feel free to visit us at leavingmaga.org. You can connect with us there and also help us grow our YouTube channel. Thank you so much for watching. We appreciate everyone's support out there.
Can't get enough Midas? Check out the Midas Plus Substack for ad-free articles, reports, podcasts, daily recaps from Ron Filipkowski, and more. Sign up for free now at MidasPlus.com.